Go. Good morning, good evening.
Whoa! First day of the season.
To this September 25th, it is the first day of the college basketball season per John Rothstein. We made it.
Oh, huge day, huge day. I mean, I'm just so glad college basketball is back. There's just a fever pitch around the country today, opening day.
Yeah, for those of you who don't follow John Rothstein from CBS Sports on Twitter, he's been counting down to today. This is the official start of the college basketball season. And David, I think you've been watching all the games tonight, haven't you?
Yes, we've got some whip around coverage for you here. Are you ready for this? This is sure. This is exciting stuff. All right. Let me see, I'm a little technical. First game jitters. Okay, what do we see here? This is okay. Do we see Rupp Arena? This is Rupp Arena first day of the season. Just huge.
Are they playing a game?
Well, you can see them practicing. I'm a little surprised by the sparse crowd in there.
Where's the game? Who are they playing?
Well, it looks like they're just they've got the ball racks out there.
They're not even televising this on SEC Network.
Aren't they playing Eastern Kentucky or Western Kentucky or
I didn't see the schedule. Well, here's Allen Fieldhouse. Again, normally like a basketball hotbed, you'd expect more people there.
Who's Kansas playing tonight? So you're a scheduling expert. Who's Kansas playing tonight?
They're playing Kansas.
Okay. Well, anyway, here we go down the Tobacco Road, one of the most electric atmospheres in all of college basketball. This is Cameron Indoor Stadium. The players aren't even on the court. At least in the first two, there were players on the court.
David, where are the games?
Where the games are. Well, here's Ty Tell's alma mater, Arizona, also not on the court.
What's
the atmosphere been like around Arizona today? A lot of excitement,
Yeah, Sean Miller has not been fired today. It's fantastic.
Okay, another day without Sean Miller. We've got a couple more places to get to. Here is Pitt opening day. That's a picture of an actual game from a year ago. My mistake. There's just barely anybody there, so it sort of fit right in. And we've got one more place to get to. This is live from earlier today. This is the Nebraska Cornhuskers, on opening day here, just September 25th. They're all excited for basketball season.
David, I don't think that's real, David.
No, that's a real picture. It really is a picture.
It is a picture. I don't know what it's a picture of, though.
You sure that's not their volleyball team celebrating?
Well, no, it was a picture of them storming the court today.
I'm not sure what's going on here, why we don't have games, but I do know that I'm Chad Sherwood. He's David Griggs. We've got John Tytel and John Stalico with us as well. This is Hoops HD, and this is our September podcast. And it is not the official start of the college basketball season, despite what Rothstein may say. That's still over a month away. Final September podcast, though.
Humorous about counting down to the day is today is one of a lot of players and coaches' least favorite day. No one probably scrimmaged today. If they did, it wasn't for very long. It means practice is 4 hours instead of two, and they can run stairs as a team, is essentially what it means. But anyway. First day of practice.
Happy first day of practice, everybody. But let's turn to the topics we really want to hit on. This is our final off-season podcast. We come back to you in October. We're going to be getting into preseason previews, previewing conferences, and all the other fun stuff. And Tytel, I want to start with you with a question here. We're about a year or so past, coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the announcement that kind of rocked the college basketball world last year with the FBI announcing the indictments. And I know your alma mater there, Arizona, you lost an assistant coach and almost lost your head coach. But there's kind of this huge doom and gloom coming out of that this was just going to be the tip of the iceberg and that the entire sport was going to be turned on its head. And while we lost a few assistant coaches, while the fallout at Louisville, although I think part was because they'd already had prior problems with Pitino before that, but the fallout at Louisville was pretty rough. There hasn't, if I'm wrong, there really has been much more that's affected the game other than that.
I don't know that we've seen any huge examples of people being charged with crimes and thrown in jail, if that's what you mean. The fact remains that, DeAndre Ayton was, the subject of an investigation, and he is no longer in college basketball. So P.S. I hope they throw the book at him because now it doesn't matter. as far as Pitino, he's one of arguably the best coaches in the modern era. He's no longer in college basketball, and he's got a book coming out, and maybe we'll find out all we need to know about it in there. That being said, I don't know that I'm ready to say that there is no iceberg because I don't know what the future holds, and I think there's still people looking into shady corners of the internet and payments and this and that. Brian Bowen tried to make a comeback. He will also not be in college basketball this year. So I agree it didn't turn out to be the iceberg, but I wouldn't get on the Titanic just yet, shall we say.
To your point, Chad, and I hate agreeing or furthering your points, there was a year ago sort of this cloud, at least it felt to me like hanging over the season, like you didn't know how things were going to play out when – Louisville, Arizona were playing. You didn't really know, like, at what point was somebody else going to go down? And is this going to completely eclipse what's happening on the court between the lines? But last season, at no point, at least like once we got into the regular routine, did it feel any different, any less exciting? I mean, how many shows were we talking about the FBI last year? How many shows or was the general media talking about it? I mean, basketball still felt like basketball last year. I think that's your point, isn't it, John?
It is. When I walked away from the end of last season, I was thinking about Villanova 2 championships in 3 years. I was thinking about UMBC's shock over Virginia. I was thinking about Loyola's Final Four run, Nevada's great tournament run. Oh yeah, that whole FBI thing went on also. I mean, yeah. It was kind of like we entered the season thinking that the season wouldn't even count, that half the schools would end up on probation by the time we reached the tournament. And nobody ended up on probation. Nobody was barred because of this whole thing.
Right.
No, nobody goes on probation, but here in Xavier land, we saw some secondary fallout because Chris Mack ended up getting the full-time job at Louisville after David Padgett did somewhat of a noble job in the interim role, but he is still not in the coaching ranks as far as I know.
Yeah, how does that happen? So Louisville egregiously breaks the rules all over the place multiple times, and the end result is that Xavier loses their coach.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, we weren't really going to discuss this, but let me hit on this here. Stalica, Pete Gillen, Skip Prosser, Thad Matta, Sean Miller, Chris Mack. That is your last group of coaches at Xavier. I'm not too worried about Travis Steele. I mean, you've got an incredible track record there of head coaches, so I wouldn't be too concerned, really.
Well, the funny thing is we haven't really had that much of a change in coaching trees since Prosser left in 2001 because Prosser was actually part of the Pete Gillen coaching tree and actually went outside of the family at that time to Thad Matta, who's actually spawned his own coaching tree of Sean Miller, Chris Mack, and now we'll see how the Travis Steele experiment works out in year number one.
I just think if there was ever a school that I was going to trust on their head coaching picks, Ty Telly, would you agree with this? It's going to be Xavier.
They do have a great track record, and I mean, I'm not ready to say that Travis Steele is going to turn into a superstar just by virtue of eating some Cincinnati chili, but I mean, we'll see what happens.
Gold Star is better. We got into this on Twitter, but Gold Star is better.
David, I know you want to tell one other thing is you and I had a little disagreement off air about this, but last year we saw right around this in October, the NCAA suddenly approving third exhibition games for everybody. There were going to be a game against a D1 opponent. Normally you can only have a closed scrimmage against a D1 opponent or an open game against a non-D1 opponent for your up to two exhibition games. The new thing here with last year was you could have an open game against another D1 opponent if it was for charity, and it was a third game. And a lot of schools have applied this year for a waiver to allow a third exhibition game against a D1 opponent for charity, and the NCAA has denied them, correct?
Yeah, well, what you call a disagreement is really a case of you being wrong and me being correct, which is typically how our disagreements go. There's that. Secondly, college basketball just can't seem to figure out the start of its season. Practice used to officially start at Midnight Madness because that was the first time you were allowed to practice at 12:01 a.m. Now it starts much earlier, and Midnight Madness really marks the beginning of nothing other than staying up until midnight. And we keep moving the start of the season back and back and back, and now we can't really seem to figure out how many exhibition games we could have. But the standing rule for as long as I can remember anyway is that you're allowed two exhibition contests, one if you want to open the game up to the public, it has to be against another college team. That's a relatively new rule. I think in the last 10 or 15 years, it used to be you could play a non-scholastic team if you wanted to.
Until, no more games against the Harlem Globetrotters, Trotter,
right,
Athletes in Action. Those are all gone, yeah.
Right. And another stupid rule, because I want to say it was UConn. Well, I don't know that it was UConn, but I think it was UConn that basically scheduled an AAU high school team of a player they were recruiting. And rather than just say you can't schedule high school teams or AAU teams, they said, no, you have to play other colleges. So
now here's where we have to pay attention to what Chad said about you can have, as one of your two exhibition games, a game against D1 competition. Because right. Earlier today, it was announced that Penn State and West Virginia are actually going to have an exhibition as part of a charity game that's related to Hurricane Florence.
Right.
John, the amended rule now is you can play another D1 opponent in an open game if it is for charity. But what they are not allowing this year is it to be a third game. It has to be one of your first two games, right, David?
Which they should allow the third game. I think there should be three exhibition games anyway. And again, it's not a disagreement. You're just wrong, and I'm right. Now,
but it always warms my heart to see a pair of old A-10 rivals hooking up.
Yeah. Now, getting back to what happened last year, this whole thing actually started amazingly with Kansas and Missouri applying for a waiver. And again, like essentially a waiver is what it sounds like. It's permission to break a rule for a special reason or for a mitigating circumstance. Their special reason was that it was going to raise millions of dollars for charity, which it did. The NCAA granted that. Once a waiver has been granted, other schools were like, well, if they got it, then let's try and apply to it. And it got to the point to where they were basically rubber stamping them. I want to say that close to 80% of the schools that applied to do these charity games got them. And I failed to see how that was a bad thing. And instead of just and generally, like when you see waivers approved at that rate, it's kind of trending in the direction of becoming a rule. So while I thought we're only a year or two away from a third exhibition game where the third game can go to charity, instead, they don't let Kansas and Missouri play this year. No games were approved for the David Griggs Foundation or any other charity out there. And they're saying that now you're only allowed two games and one of those can be your charity game. And I kind of think that it's unfortunate, to say the least, that I think a lot of schools were counting on playing that third game as a charity game. And by the time that this kind of ruling came down the pike, or this not really ruling, it's always been the rule, but this decree, if you will, schools were already locked into two exhibition games and not
David,
to get out of it.
David, this is where I have the disagreement with you. Kansas and Missouri can play a charity game 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, if they want to, without any problem. All they have to do is Kansas has to cancel their exhibition game against Emporia State. But obviously, Kansas thinks an exhibition game against Emporia State is more important than a charity game against Missouri.
Yeah, well, why not just have three games?
Well, why not cancel Emporia State?
Well, or why not just have an entire non-championship season in August and September? But that's another story. We've debated that as well.
But you got any thoughts on this, or is it all just meaningless because it's exhibition basketball we're talking about?
No, I mean, well, yes, it is meaningless because it's exhibition basketball. But if there's one thing I've learned from David after many, many years on my little laptop, it's that he wants a border war more than I want anything in the world. Yeah. So if we can give it to him and make him stop talking about it every week, let's do it.
But then he's just going to talk about Nebraska national championships.
Well, why won't Kansas and Missouri play? I mean, they should play every year. They should play every week. They should play 10 times a year.
I'd be curious to see if North Carolina and UNC Wilmington actually end up clearing a space on their schedule because of Hurricane Florence. Wilmington actually is going to be starting their practice at North Carolina until classes reopen. I believe it's going to be October 1st from what I understand.
That's not a serious note. I mean, the Carolinas were devastated by this hurricane, and our best wishes out to all of them.
Yeah.
But David, speaking of Kansas and Missouri, one of our main topics we want to hit on tonight, because it is September and we honestly probably couldn't think of anything else to discuss.
We couldn't think of anything else to discuss. That's what it is.
What was rivalries? We like to do a show or two during the course of a season about rivalries, and we decided why not do that in September this year? And I kind of wanted to go through each of you here and kind of discuss the questions of what is the best rivalry in conference, what is the best non-conference rivalries that are out there, and then we're going to kind of hit on the idea on the question of what rivalries don't exist anymore that should be brought back or should be started. But let's start with that first thing here. And David, let me start with you since you're on my screen right now. What do you think the best rivalries, both in conference and non-conference, are out there right now?
Well, it's kind of hard to say that it's not Duke and North Carolina. It depends on how you define best. That is a conference game, so there's stakes to it. It's got an entire week dedicated to it on ESPN. It's not the most bitter rivalry by any means. I don't even think it's the most bitter rivalry or feud, if you will, in the ACC, but it's bitter enough to make it interesting. The games are usually highly competitive. It's two-storied program, so it's not like you don't get many games that are 100-70. And I just think that would be the, if not the best or biggest, the most notable one. But again, it depends on what is best to you. I think to me, like, I don't think it's the most bitter rivalry. It isn't even the one that I would like to see the most. You'll never guess the one I'd like to see the most. They don't play anymore. It's Kansas-Missouri. They played last year in a charity game. They're not allowed to play in a charity game this year.
Tytel, what about you? What do you think the best rivalries are out there among major conferences? I know you probably want to hit on one among a couple of a smaller conferences as well, probably.
Me? As far as major conference, it's hard to beat Duke Carolina just because they've had so many legendary games with legendary half-court shots and guys bleeding and guys dunking over other guys. And the fact that they're usually ranked both in the top 10. And it's the mystique that, like, I think the status that they've never, ever met an NCAA tourney. Obviously, several times in the ACC tourney, but the chance to see them, because you know it's not going to happen because it never happens with all the future NBA talent at the ready. As far as smaller teams, I was looking. There's several conferences where, if you look over the past several years, there have been two that have risen above the rest of the conference to battle it out for titles. The one I wanted to highlight was in the Summit League. It used to be, even just as of 2011, Oakland and Oral Roberts fighting it out. Past 7 years, it's been the Dakotas, North Dakota State and South Dakota State. South Dakota State has made the conference tourney title game 6 times in 7 years. North Dakota State won it twice when South Dakota State didn't. It's played in Sioux Falls, so a bit of a home field advantage. Coach David Richmond has a huge pedigree, player, assistant, and coach at North Dakota State. DJ Otzelberger, on the other hand, has only been around South Dakota State 2 years. Obviously, he's doing pretty well. As far as looking forward at rivalry this season, the Jackrabbits have Mike Dom. The Bison do not.
Yeah, Mike Dom is going to be real good. We're talking about, player of the year. I mean, he could be player of the year nationally.
State. Another rivalry with that, it's not like the two top front runners, but it's nice to see North Dakota in that rivalry. That North Dakota, North Dakota State basketball game is really electric if you've never watched it, and it's good to get that twice a year now. So
yeah, with North Dakota moving into the Summit League this year, we're gonna have that twice a year, and that's going to be exciting to watch also. But Stalika, you're a Big East guy now with Xavier, but I'm before Xavier time, almost as much, maybe even more so, going back some time now than Duke Carolina, some of those old Big East rivalries, the Syracuse-Georgetown, the Villanova-Georgetown, you mix the UConn teams in there. I mean, weren't those classically just some of the most intense games, even more so than Duke Carolina?
Syracuse-Georgetown especially comes to mind because that was really the first of the major rivalries, but you also get teams like St. John's involved and even UConn, who was just the ugly duckling in what was a fierce league in the 80s. But I thought you were going to segue to Xavier and Cincinnati, but Cincinnati fans this year, they actually have a slightly different rivalry to look forward to, and that's going to be Ohio State in their opener, where the Buckeyes and the Bearcats are actually going to have a a home and home. And there have been some rumblings as to whether or not Ohio State, Xavier, Cincinnati, and Dayton could ever hook up in events similar to what's known as the Crossroads Classic in Indianapolis that annually involves Indiana, Purdue, Butler, and Notre Dame.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there, Stalika. I think you're right about the old Big East. Well, Syracuse, Georgetown in particular, it's fun to see that that series is still going. It's still heated. It's still a fun atmosphere, but I don't think it's ever going to be what it was when it was a conference game in the classic Big East. Syracuse, UConn have met a couple times as well. And what
the Bristol Cup.
Yeah. And, while it's a big game, I think that being a conference game adds so much to it. But that being said, Xavier-Cincinnati, really intense rivalry, at least in that region. I don't know how much it resonates nationally anymore, but that one's good. But why don't these Ohio teams play each other? You have basically Xavier-Cincinnati and Dayton within 50 miles of each other and Ohio State not that far away. Ohio State, Cincinnati playing for 2 years. Hopefully it gets extended beyond that. But they've only played, I think, 21 times in their entire history. That's ridiculous. Why don't these teams from Ohio ever play each other? John, it's your fault.
Well, we may also have the 20-game Big Ten schedule to blame coming up, because Ohio State, if you look at their schedule, they have the ACC Big Ten Challenge. They also have the CBS Sports Classic, where they rotate Kentucky, North Carolina, and UCLA. So they're not going to have as many non-conference games as they normally would, but I'm sure there's still going to be at least some effort on behalf of Chris Holtmann and some of the other coaches like Mick Cronin, Anthony Grant, and Travis Steele, to see if they can get a potential series going.
Yeah.
Well, let's add a couple of the few more rivalries out there that have been very intense, even very intense recently, non-conference-wise. At Titel, I mean, obviously, you think about Louisville, Kentucky. I mean, maybe not so much now that what's happened at Louisville, but, you know, with where you had video a few years ago of Pitino giving the finger, walking off the court,
yes.
Stuff like that.
I mean, yes.
My second favorite walk off the court, too, of course, Jimmy Patsos, who has the best ever. I think there has been some luster off of the Kentucky-Louisville famed and fabled rivalry. As much as I want to go with a Arizona-ASU, I got to say, like, one whole key to the rivalry concept is that it is like two, you get the immovable force and the irresistible object. Like, as much as I want to say Arizona-ASU is a rivalry, because it is, Territorial Cup. I'm happy to report that it has been one-sided for several years now. Not that ASU sucks. They made the NCAA tourney, and they have a good recruiting class, and we have had some stumbles, to say the least, in recruiting.
And they've got Bobby Hurley.
Can you permit me a statement here, and I'll just, like, wait for comment. All rivalries are feuds, but not all feuds are rivalries. I know, like, Marshall, West Virginia, big-time feud. I wouldn't call that a rivalry anymore. Anyway, is Arizona ASU sort of in that category of being more of a feud than a rivalry, since Arizona just pretty much dominates it?
Well, Marshall and West Virginia, they did have a chance in the NCAA tournament, but as the puppet noted, it was actually one-sided in favor of West Virginia.
And West Virginia is so much more accomplished than Marshall. I mean, it was what Marshall, with all due respect, and it isn't much due respect, that was their first tournament appearance in about 40 years or 30 years or whatever it was. So, but again, like Arizona State, definitely a feud. Well, no, I don't think it's fair to say it's not a rivalry, even though it's more one-sided. That one is.
It's the rivalry. I mean, the state has only been around for 100 or so years, and these were the two big schools, with all due respect to Northern Arizona and the Lopes, and they've been battling it out since before I was born, and the alums hate each other, as I readily admit, and it's fierce. And the fact is, like, you guys saw the tourney last March. Who had a better chance of winning, Arizona or ASU? Arizona got destroyed by Buffalo. ASU, like, maybe they're going to win a tourney game before we do. God help them.
I kind of think when you look at this feud versus rivalry, I mean, the true rivalries are the ones where I think there is almost a level of hate there, more so than – I mean, you have something like at the Mid-American Conference, Akron and Kent State. Sure, they don't like each other. You get – Manhattan and Iona, that might be a little bit more hate than anything, but there's some of these like Louisville, Kentucky, like a BYU, Utah, that there, David, I think there's some general actual genuine hate between these schools.
Yeah, there's four rivalries that I've always said that when it comes to hate, bitterness, in whatever you want to call it, like the general amount of just bile and venom, there were four that were above and beyond anything else. One was Louisville, Kentucky. One was West Virginia, Pitt, which I don't know. I still think the hatred is there, even though Pitt is so bad now and even though it's not a conference game anymore. One was Kansas and Missouri, all joking aside. I mean, that one was wild. And even in a meaningless charity game last year, you and I both watched it and both commented. Even though they hadn't played in 6 years and even though the game meant nothing, you could still feel the energy of that game, could you not, watching it?
I wish our colleague Rocco Miller were also here, because he would also tell us about Gonzaga and Washington.
That's Washington definitely a few. But
upswing.
Yeah, the other one, BYU-Utah. I mean, that might be the biggest one in terms. It's not the biggest rivalry, but it might be the most bitter rivalry. I think it actually is.
Yeah, and there are some. I guess, there's a few others that are pretty bitter that are on a smaller scale. You look at, David, one that we've been following in recent years has been the Battle of the Boulevard down there in Nashville between Belmont and Lipscomb. These are two schools that have been fighting each other. They've been playing each other multiple times a year since they were NAIA schools.
And right, yeah.
It's bitter between these schools, but it's not known nationally. One that's starting to get known nationally is this Rhode Island Providence rivalry that's really gotten good the last few years, I thought.
Yeah, that I knew Providence Rhodey was a rivalry. I mean, obviously it is, but I think it was it 3 or 4 years ago we were watching it, and it was I was shocked at the level of intensity of that game. And you know, you read up on it, and the thing about rivalries is that they're sort of like centric to the region. Every rivalry is the biggest rivalry in the country in that region. If you go to Iowa, they'll say there's nothing bigger than Iowa State, Iowa. If you go to Michigan, they'll say there's nothing bigger than Michigan State, Michigan, or Michigan, Ohio State, although they may
Michigan,
be right
Ohio State. Well, yeah. I mean, it's a football thing more so than basketball, but that, I mean, Ohio State people won't even call Michigan, Michigan. They'll call it that state up north. So,
right. But Providence Rhodey is bigger than it's more bitter than anybody outside that region probably realizes. And fortunately, the last several games have just been fantastic games, like crazy finishes, really intense games. And that's one that I circle every year now.
And I guess when we're talking about some of these small ones, also, Titel, we've got to talk about your Penn Quakers.
So, I mean, in the long storied 2-year tradition of the Ivy League tournament, Penn's won one of them. Princeton's on one of them. I mean, we own it.
but I mean, just going back, I mean, those two teams were the Ivy League throughout the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s. I mean, until Cornell for a couple of years, and then Harvard made some noise in the conference. That was it, was it not?
No doubt. I used to have it memorized. I think it was something where, like, I think Harvard might have won one in the 80s, but between the two of us, we won it, like, 23 of 24 years or something ridiculous. I was there in the early 90s because I'm that old, where Penn won it 3 years in a row, and then Princeton beat us out the last year, and then Princeton had the win over the defending champion UCLA Bruins on the backdoor pass, and they got all the notoriety. So yeah, it's been and it is, that is also a feud and a rivalry, like another thing where the alums and the students hate the other school.
I want to say it was Cornell that was the only team that broke the Penn-Princeton stranglehold during the 80s.
Yeah, Donahue, who's now at Penn.
Donahue was in the 2000s when he went out with Cornell, David, but he was not coaching in the 80s. I don't know how old was he in the 80s, but
if you'd let me finish my thought, that's what I was going to say.
Let's kind of hit on some rivalries that are no longer out there. And I mean, we already touched a bit on Kansas, Missouri, and we don't think that again, thankfully. But
well, they could have played this year.
What about
they couldn't get a waiver?
What about things like Duke and Maryland? These are former conference games. Texas and Texas A&M. I mean, games like this. Salika, what are your thoughts on trying to get some of these games back? They've been played a little bit since the conferences broke up, but shouldn't these be yearly games?
Well, we've had games like Texas, Texas A&M, and Xavier Dayton come up in exempt tournaments where Texas and A&M actually played each other in Atlantis. And
right, because ESPN forced them to when they both got in the same tournament, right?
And then Xavier Dayton were in the tournament, the Advocare in Orlando a couple of years ago. But Duke, Maryland, I mean, you would think at least once they would try to hook them up as far as the ACC Big Ten Challenge goes. But in all seriousness, they always try to hook Duke up with one of the premier Big Ten teams, especially with Maryland being in a down cycle right now. But on a related note, Maryland and Georgetown, they did hook up for a couple years, but that series now seems to be back on hold.
I don't understand that at all. Okay, they go that amount of time without playing each other, and then they play each other in back-to-back years in games that were just quite honestly, and this is not hyperbole, I have never seen that level of intensity in a November game ever. Like, that arena was bonkers, that first game at Maryland, and it felt so good that it was back. And then I thought that the understanding was that that series was going to continue, and it hasn't, and that is a damn shame.
Especially after Georgetown melted down against Maryland a couple seasons ago in the turn game at the Verizon Center.
Right. Yeah, and Tytel, that's all in your backyard there. Georgetown, why aren't they playing Maryland? Why aren't they playing George Washington? I mean, they have to take a train to the game. Is it too close? Is that the problem?
So I would love to see this game played at the Capital One Arena as much as anybody because of the storied tradition of the two schools. The reason it took a hiatus for decades, plural, is that I think it's as simple as Gary Williams and John Thompson were not fans of each other because they were literally always on the recruiting trail against each other for the what is now looked at as a hotbed between Maryland, D.C., Virginia. There's like so much talent. Kevin Durant obviously comes to mind as one of the locals who turned out to be okay. They finally got over it. I don't think it's a coincidence that those two coaches who are Hall of Famers are no longer at their respective schools. Unfortunately, some of their sons are no longer at the schools either. But no, I'm glad that they got it going. And the sad thing is, like, I got to say, like, if they played Maryland, Georgetown in 2018, 2019, are you going to circle that game on your calendar?
Yeah, I would. I circled them all. But what it was it was without knowing all the details, and I know that people 2.5 decades later are still annoyed about this. There was a dispute because it was a regular home-and-home, and then they were scheduled to meet in the tournament. I think it was the BB&T tournament or whatever, but it was a tournament involving area teams. So they didn't schedule a game that year, like their regular home-and-home. And the game was in D.C. on Georgetown, what is Georgetown's home court, but it wasn't a Georgetown home game as far as the event management and the tickets. And there was a dispute over – I say dispute. There was a freaking war over whose turn it was to host the game next, and it took them 22 years to resolve it.
Well, I want to have one other, David, that is gone. That is Kentucky-Indiana. Was a regular game in December every year for years, and was pretty heated.
Yeah. It used to be on a semi-neutral site. They alternated between playing in Louisville and then playing in Indianapolis, but the tickets were always split. So really the only thing that changed was the venue. I don't know if it was Indiana or Kentucky that wanted to move it to campus sites, but they moved it to campus sites. And then it was Kentucky that wanted to move off campus. And what they proposed, I thought, was more than fair. I know Galen probably disagrees, but they wanted to move the game to the football stadium. Is it Lucas Oil? I don't know the NFL. Is it the one in? Okay. They wanted to move it there and set up sort of like a 40,000-45,000 people extravaganza and play it there every year. And Indiana didn't want to do that, or more specifically, Tom Crean didn't want to do that. He wanted to keep it at campus sites. So they ended the game over something that, in my opinion, could have easily been worked out. And again, it's just the business of it. So it went away, and it hasn't come back.
I think that's what gets down to, Sleeka, here, is that we end up losing rivalries over a silly disagreement almost, and now we get 20 years where we don't have a game that we should be getting every year.
Well, there was also a time before the neutral games where Kentucky and Indiana were playing each other on campus, and Indiana actually played Louisville home and home a couple times, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Those two don't regularly play. I mean, I think they're playing this year, and they've played the last couple years, but it's not a fixture game. You'd think it would be. The campuses are about an hour apart, actually.
Well, I guess I have one other question I want to ask here, and we probably skipped a couple of very good rivalries. In fact, just came to my mind was St. Francis Brooklyn versus LIU Brooklyn, another great, great rivalry that we didn't hit on. But obviously there are rivalries that don't exist yet that maybe they should exist. We are welcoming in the Cal Baptist Lancers this year to Division One. They're playing Riverside. There's a UC Riverside there. Shouldn't this be a big rivalry game?
I think there is.
They be playing the Longwood Lancers in like a joust to see who the best Lancers are? Dave, let me start with you. What rivalries don't exist that really should exist out there these days?
John alluded to one, and it actually is starting up. It's currently a 2-year deal, and I hope it's extended to 10, because I think that was even being discussed, is signing a 10-year deal. That's Cincinnati, Ohio State. So good for Chris Holtman and Mick Cronin to finally get that ironed out. The ones that don't play that you really wish would are Kansas and Wichita State. And I know that they've played in the past. I realize that it wasn't so much a home and home. The disagreement was Wichita wanted a home game. Kansas didn't want to go there. And Kansas just doesn't feel like they have anything to gain from that series. I mean, I get why they feel that way, but at the same time, it's like it gets to a point, and Kansas, Kentucky, Duke are at that point to where you could literally say that about anybody. You don't need – I hate hearing, we don't need to play that team. Well, you don't need to play anybody when you're as good as Kansas is. So why not play Wichita State? They played in the tournament. Wichita beat them. Kansas is way more storied than Wichita. I'm not going to argue that for a second. But to say that Wichita is somehow less worthy than the teams Kansas normally plays, that's just wrong. So that's one that I'd kind of like to see that hasn't been started up yet. Probably more than any of them. Others, the ones that I'd like to see started up are former rivalries that just don't play anymore, like Kansas, Missouri, Texas A&M, Kentucky, Indiana, and you just kind of want to ask these people, where are the grown-ups, and why are you fighting over this silly nonsense?
Tytel, what about you? What games should be out there? Are there rivalries that you think need to get going?
I'm going to give you two, and they're going to both be based on geography. So as far as my undergrad at Penn, Drexel, it's literally next door to Penn and Drexel. They're right there. And Penn plays the rest of the Big Five with St. Joe's and Villanova, Temple and LaSalle. It's silly that they don't play a school that's right now. I don't know if Drexel wants to play us, because now that we're good, we had some lean years. Now that we're good, they might not want to, but it makes all the sense in the world. And then going out west, Grand Canyon, the Lopes, and the
Sun,
Tempe, they're less than a half hour drive from each other. And the reason I don't think you're going to see it anytime soon is that ASU is enraged that Grand Canyon just came out of the blue a few years ago, and now they're good, and now they're recruiting the Phoenix area as well as the West, but specifically the Devils had Phoenix locked up. Occasionally it gets somebody down to Tucson, but Grand Canyon literally stepped in there and said, hey, we're here, and ASU is very unhappy, and sadly I wouldn't be surprised if they never played, just because I think that is beyond a feud. I think it's just burning hate.
Well, there was also a time when the entire Pac-12 was vehemently against Grand Canyon, when they were mainly a for-profit institution. I believe they're converting over to being a non-profit institution like all other D1 institutions would be right now.
Yeah, that's what I've heard also. But Slika, what about you? Any other games that you think we should get going here? Any big rivalries?
Xavier, Georgia. I mean, isn't that the obvious answer?
For those of you that missed it, about
10 years ago. That's now. Actually funny if you're in on the joke. Okay, go ahead, Chad, explain.
ESPN was doing their championship week, which was all built around the North Carolina Duke game.
It had a rivalry week. Rivalry week, not championship week.
Rivalry week. Yeah, built around. But they also had the Michigan Ohio State playing that week and everything. And part of their advertisement was, for some reason, they had a Xavier Georgia non-conference game in there. And so they're advertising rivalry week and advertising North Carolina Duke, Michigan Ohio State, and Xavier Georgia. So
it is still the most ridiculous promo I've ever seen in my life. Rivalry week heats up as the rivals Xavier and Georgia, like two schools that have no geographic relationship, no institutional, like they couldn't possibly be any different.
But oddly enough, have actually faced off in an NCAA tournament one year.
Yep, they did.
Well, I guess on that note, let me run through each of you here for any other final thoughts for the night. And I guess, Tytel, let me start with you.
So it's hard to believe, as we still have baseball on TV and NFL just getting going, but we're only 6 weeks away from the Champions Classic. And as much as I respect guys like Bill Self and Tom Izzo, I am all in on this Duke-Kentucky game, November 6th in Indianapolis. You got a pair of top five seeds from last March, and they're the only two teams in the nation who can put out a starting five of only McDonald's All-Americans. Everybody else is four or fewer. This is despite the fact that these teams lost four guys to the top 11 picks in the draft last year: Bagley, Carter, Knox, and Gilgeous Alexander. They just keep reloading. The Blue Devils might have the best freshman class in the history of the sport. Forget the Fab Five or whoever else. RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish, all projected as lottery picks next summer. I'm praying that Reddish plays. He has a groin muscle strain. He missed the summer. I hope he's healthy so we can see what he does. The most amazing thing, can you imagine a universe where we might not have a single Kentucky player taken in the first round of next year's draft? I still can't believe that I could even utter such a phrase, but it's on the table as possible.
You don't think Reed Travis is going to be a first-round draft pick?
I think so, but I'm telling you, I've seen the projections, and it's the Duke guys in the lottery, and I don't see any Kentucky guys in the first round.
Well, this Champions Classic, though, Duke-Kentucky, the other game, Michigan State-Kansas, there is a chance that that could be your final four at the end of the year as well, which is amazing how we're starting the season off in a way that, David, I think we've been screaming that we need to start it off for years.
Yes.
Before I get to you, let me start. Let me go to Stalika for his final thought.
Well, actually, two final thoughts. Number one, maybe it is college basketball season because Duke and Kentucky have cracked the top 25. Oh, wait, wrong sports.
That's incredible. They're both ranked in football.
But in all seriousness, I also wanted to – we've shouted out to North Alabama and Cal Baptist, who are going to be joining Division I this year. We had also alluded to UC San Diego, who's going to be joining, and I believe it's 2020-21. But yes, we also have another budding rivalry in the Northeast Conference, and I have to thank Lee Del Vecchio for pointing this out. The Merrimack Warriors are going to be – moving up from D2 in the Northeast 10 up to Division 1 in the Northeast Conference starting in 2019-20. So that's a small Catholic college that's located in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yeah, good pointing that out.
And a possible rivalry here with the UMass Lowell team out of the America East there. So
yep.
It's so already a Hockey East rivalry.
There we go. All right, David.
You know, one of the things alluding to what you had discussed, Chad, of rivalries that we'd like to see or feuds that would be rivalries if they'd played, I just wish, like, the grown-ups would finally show up at a lot of places where these rivalries have ended. Texas and Texas A&M, even the coaches in football and basketball have said that they would like to play. They played in a charity game last year. It's just that the administrators are still, like, arguing like a bunch of, you know, it's just juvenile reasons. And I'm not going to say that, like, there's no reason at all to feel upset or angry at the other school, but really don't run away from what would be a high energy event. Like, run toward it. And you see that everywhere. Kentucky and Indiana need to resume. Kansas and Missouri need to resume. I mean, if you don't think that there's interest in that game, then you weren't alive a year ago. Gonzaga, Washington finally got it back together. No, and I think they're both better off for it. But you know, play these games. Play them. Cincinnati and Ohio State, it's good that they're playing. They should have been playing all along. It's good for the sport. It's good that BYU-Utah resumed. It's good, sort of, I guess, that Pitt and West Virginia resumed, although it's not nearly the same. I just hate that, like, we're denied these really intense rivalry games, what would be really exciting games, because of childishness.
Well, I got one more rivalry that I think we do need, and I'm gonna end it on this here, because, David, I think you need a rival. And I know it's stepping outside of basketball. The Philadelphia Flyers just announced a brand new mascot tonight.
I hate that guy.
Gritty the Orange Monstrosity. David, your new rival.
I don't like that guy anyway. Like, how come he gets to be the Flyers mascot?
I have no idea what that thing is, but on that note,
Flyers mascot.
I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back again next month with lots of preseason previews, preseason conference previews, all kinds of other great content coming up on the website. Tytel's been posting tons of interviews. I think you've got a lot more to come still. Keep reading those, and we will talk to you again real soon.